a lonely vegetarian, sweep you off your feet like a maid Marian, having fun like a seminarian, await, you say you're a happy Unitarian, laughing in the wind like an old Bulgarian. Hey, by the way, are you a librarian? Oh, how sweet, a lonely librarian.
Hello and welcome to the Mount Kisco Public Library podcast. Today we're thrilled to present Emma McLaughlin and Nicola Kraus, who are co-authors of The Nanny Diaries and The Real Real, and they're working on, I understand, a new project. So whatever we want to ask them, we can now ask them because we have them here in the library, and it's very exciting. So
thank you. We're thrilled to be here.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say that. One thing that I was really wondering about, do you guys find it difficult, or how do you work together? Because when you read the books, you can't tell that it's two authors. It really reads like one voice.
Well, we've been writing together. It'll be 10 years in January, and we're very lucky that the method that we hit upon writing our first book worked, and so we've used it over and over again. We start by outlining. Once we've hit upon a topic, which usually comes out of our lunchtime conversations, then we'll start by creating, in the case of The Nanny Diaries, our first novel, it was a 26-page outline. So it was very detailed. It really covered chapter by chapter, scene by scene, exactly what was going to happen. It's sort of an excruciating part of the process because everything's in play. Boys can become girls, fall can become spring, years can be changed. So until we sort of nailed down those details, it's very anxiety-producing. And then as we sort of establish each part, then we get more and more secure in the story. And then once we have the outline down, we'll split the outline up into scenes, and Emma will write half of the scenes, and I will write the other half of the scenes, and we'll string that together, and that will give us our first draft. And then we begin the process, which will take about another half a year of just going through that manuscript over and over and over again to make sure that if a stranger read it, they would understand what we were trying to go for, and that if a stranger read it and understood what we were going for, that they'd care and they'd want to keep turning the page. And then finally we give it into our editor, and our editor then sort of tells us, you know, where we're still missing things or where we have too much of something else. And that sort of becomes a collaboration amongst the three of us. And then finally we get to see it with a cover on it.
Wow, that's so complicated. So yeah, you had a question? Okay, so if I understand the question, do you pick separate characters to write when you're doing your books? So one of you takes some characters and the other one takes the other characters.
I think it's not that we choose separate characters, but we definitely tend to identify, or not identify, but sort of channel different characters. Usually the heroine is a pretty 50-50 split, or the protagonist. We usually completely share the identifying that voice and being able to conjure it. And then I would say that the majority of the characters we sort of both have a feel for, but there's always a couple of pivotal characters that one or the other of us can kind of just instantly conjure. If you could say to one of us, what would so-and-so do in this situation? One of us can close our eyes and see it, and one of us has to really, it takes 5 minutes longer. So yeah, I think there are definitely specific characters that we connect with more. In The Nanny Diaries, Nikki really was able to just sort of understand Mrs. X, the character of Mrs. X, and it really just creepily got her. And I had a much easier time imagining Greer, who was only 4 years old, and he was a very physical character, so constantly in terms of coming up with him just being a very unique child, we had to kind of look at each scene and think about, really imagine a child in that situation that wouldn't just stand there and say something cute, but sort of the quirky components of a kid.
But we have just finished writing the sequel to The Nanny Diaries, which is called Nanny Returns, which will be out in December. And Emma is still writing Greer. Thank you. And I still don't really understand. I mean, it's very hard for me to know. And Emma always knows exactly what's motivating him or what would be organic for him to say in any given scene. So, which is great. And that's why we're so grateful there are two of us. Otherwise, you'd get half a book.
Well, that's very cool, and I can kind of see how you might both be the protagonist of The Real Real, because you both have very elegant profiles.
Oh. Thank you. That started out as a pun, and then it sort of follows the character for most of the book.
Oh, indeed, yeah, because I thought it was such a comical book in some ways and so sad in others, But I have to say I was a little disturbed by the ending, so I'm assuming that the sequel to that one's coming soon, too.
We hope so. Right now we are working on our next young adult book, which is actually not a sequel, and we're hoping that our third young adult book will be a sequel because we love those characters so much. Mm. We totally know what happens to them next, and we'd love to be able to put that down on paper.
Yeah, the assistant of the producer of the show, she was, to me, a really interesting character. I couldn't quite decide whether I believed in her or not, but she was really, really interesting. So.
That's interesting. Believed in her in what way?
I didn't know if she was for real, and I didn't quite know, do people like that really exist?
Let's have a quick synopsis of the book, I think, mm-hmm. would be helpful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that sure, might yeah. be very helpful. Spoiler-free, I suppose, because some people still might not have read it, but, you know, we can't do that entirely, right? But, yeah, sure.
Okay, so The Real Real is the story of a senior in high school set in the Hamptons, and she is part of the working class of the Hamptons. Her mom cleans houses, and her dad manages a restaurant, and I should say the Hamptons are seen as a very glamorous vacationing area for Manhattan's sort of elite. And what happens is that an MTV-like network, we call it XTV, we're a big fan of the letter X, descends on this young woman's high school and announces that they're going to do a documentary of real teen life. And they offer our protagonist, Jessie, a scholarship fund in the amount of $40,000 from a sponsor, a corporate sponsor of Doritos, to participate in this quote-unquote documentary. And Jessie's parents are like, you're so doing this. $40,000, we could use that. Jessie will be the first in her family to go to college. So Jessie agrees to participate in this documentary, which very rapidly becomes not a documentary, but a highly manipulated reality show. Ostensibly presenting Jessie's reality, only soon her house isn't really read well enough on television, so could she be photographed coming out of a mansion by the beach, and her clothes don't really read as something considered glamorous, so could she wear costumes that are designer clothing, and the boy she really likes looks a lot better with this other character, so could she have a crush on this other boy, and very soon Jessie's reality is being completely manipulated, and the book climaxes when the show comes out, and it really explores how Jessie's closest friends and family and her community respond to Jessie's reality being so misrepresented. So that's a really quick summary of The Real Real. Now, to that end, there is a character who is a producer, mm-hmm. who's a young woman, who connects with Jessie and invites her to, who's right. really the face uh-huh. of the show. And that was, I think, the character we're about to talk about.
I mean, I think Kara is, to some extent, sort of bossy and manipulative, but I think that her objective is to, you know, she wants to rise professionally. She's only in her early 20s. Her mm-hmm. obligation is to the network. At the same time, I don't think she's wholly without heart or compassion, so she sort of sympathizes with these kids who she's having to manipulate. So I think Kara herself is sort of going back and forth between having to do her job well, which really means sort of screwing these people over, and right. feeling really bad about it at the same right. time. So we like characters like that who are sort of caught between a rock yeah. and a hard place and are not all one thing or all the other.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, so I have a question about The Real Real, and I'll try to be spoiler-free as well. But the ultimate, I guess, executive producer, he seems to be a pretty unsavory character. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you guys could just talk about him a little bit and how, you know, I feel like maybe this wasn't his brainchild, but he kind of takes up the mantle and decides to exploit these poor children. I don't know.
You mean the one with the designer clothes?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Who actually is, I love this
or the
character.
Old guy.
He's
oh, no.
At one point we mentioned in passing that he went to college at 16. So he's really brilliant. But when you think
right.
of the pathology of someone like that, he was always out of step with his peers. He didn't really get to have an adolescence. So here he is now having all this power in this very adolescent community. I mean, he runs this network that completely caters to teenagers.
Fletch
thank you.
Yeah.
Fletch seems like a lech.
Yes, Fletch is a lech because he's sort of a stunted teenager. And so we thought that that was such an interesting, I'd love to bring someone like that back again in another story, because I think the pathology of what it is when you don't get to live your life in order at the right time, how that behavior comes back and manifests in inappropriate ways as it does with Fletch, I think is so interesting. And again, that's why we'd also love to write a sequel, because Fletch is not gone completely, and it would be really great to bring him back.
Okay, so now we have another question from the audience, but I'm going to have to rephrase it because it didn't show up on the recording. John's question was, how did Nicola and Emma meet, and did they meet in college, and how did they manage to come up with the idea of writing together, or did they always want to be writers, or am I getting it, John? And did they, yeah, uh-huh. Because it takes a lot of courage to do something like become a writer. And how would you do that? How would you quit any other kind of job you might have and just write?
We did meet in college. We were both in great books program, in a great book program at, where's the singular worshipful in that? We were in a great books program. And when we met in college, we were both nannies to subsidize our education at NYU, because living in New York and going to school there is extraordinarily expensive. And so it was very rare to meet a person who was nannying, as we called it, and being a student. We had friends who were doing everything else you can imagine under the sun to subsidize their education, but we didn't know another nanny. And at the time, we were so close to the experiences we were having that we couldn't have enough distance to imagine that they could be of interest to other people, and also that they could be really funny. They certainly had funny moments, but for the most part, our experiences, what we observed and witnessed, was more depressing and disturbing than it was hilarious. Unfortunately, what we were observing was an enormous amount of exploitation. We were Caucasian, college-educated citizens, and the majority of women we were working alongside were none of those things. And unfortunately, we saw many employers really take advantage of that. And so the experience left a huge impression upon us and impacted us, I would say, in almost every way. But that's the very long answer to the question, that we had no idea not only that we would write a book, but that it would be about our nanny experiences. I think at that point seemed very removed. So we graduated and went on to our field of work. I got into corporate consulting, doing management consulting, and Nikki got into acting. And we were moving down that road, and it was about 5 years actually before we kept running into each other, and we kept saying, there's something here. I mean, we couldn't stop talking about the experience we'd had. And what happened is there were a number of events that kind of came together and pushed us to the point of sitting down and writing. The specific event that happened is that Nikki had written a play, and she invited me over to do a reading. And I was completely blown away by the freshness of her concepts and her language. And it was really funny and really fresh. And I just felt like she was reading my brain. And that was right around the point that there were a number of magazine articles in the mid-90s. There was such a huge influx of cash and success in the economy. There was a lot of newly rich families on Park Avenue. And these articles were complaining about how hard it was to find good help. And help was never represented in the pieces. And we never found out if that was because they were too afraid to speak up, or whether the periodicals didn't think it was important to represent them. But it just made me and us so angry, because there was another side to this story, which is, this is a job, and you're really hard to work for, to put it mildly. So it was about that time that those two things, and I was just like, we have something, we think there's something about how we see things, we've had this experience, and we should really write a response to this. And Nanny Diaries really was a fictional response to that concept that good help is hard to find. Our response was, no, good jobs are hard to find, good bosses are hard to find. So that's what kind of finally pushed us to do that. We had no idea it would get published. We had no idea we could find an agent. We had no idea anyone other than our parents would read it. So we were completely unprepared for the tremendous success and scale of how the book was received. But continued working through the first year or so the Nanny Diaries came out, full-time at other things. And it wasn't until our next book sold that we finally were able to afford to write full-time. And that was in 2003 or four?
Two. 2002.
So we've been writing full-time together since then, which is a tremendous blessing in anywhere, but particularly in Manhattan.
Hi, I'm Mary, and hello. I'll be having you in my library next week.
Great.
Hi. And one of the things that I'm wondering as you're talking about writing, I don't know if anybody has asked this before, but how do you manage to work together? Because the three of us here are amateur writers, and for me at least, it's a very solitary thing. I need privacy, I need quiet. I just can't imagine how you manage to collaborate so well.
Well, I think we answered part of this earlier in terms of our technique, but in terms of just melding it so that we don't drive each other bonkers, we learned over time to sort of compromise as one does in any marriage. Emma will take all day while doing other things to kind of marinate on an idea, but by the time she sits down at 4 o'clock to write her scene, it's fully formed. I have to be sitting in front of the computer. If I'm somewhere else, I'll be thinking about something else. So I actually really like to get up at 7 and just work till about noon and then get my scenes finished for the day, which is the advantage of having an outline. You know when you're done, you've checked off the boxes. So when we're working together, we have to really sort of respect each other's biorhythms and kind of come to the middle. So we usually start by having lunch around 12 o'clock, and then we'll work till about 6. And we tried to go longer days at the beginning because we're like, this should be a full-time job, we should be here. And we realized we just got completely fried that by 4 o'clock, something that would take us 30 minutes to figure out would take us 5 minutes to figure out the next morning without fights. So we've learned that it actually, that more hours doesn't mean more pages. It just means more aggravation. So we're getting more and more efficient also the longer that we've done this. And it's nice because we're apart half the year, and so we get to sort of just do it our way. And then we're together half the year, and we sort of we respect each other's time.
We're also, I think what's different is that we have to be we have to be enormously structured. We outline everything. We don't ever sit down and just see where a character's going to go. Which is the luxury of writing on your own. Now, the upside of after 10 years of outlining is that I think we've learned very quickly what ideas have full arcs to them and what don't. And we've learned to really be grateful for the outlining as much as it is really tedious, because the writing's so much faster and so much more efficient. There's so many ideas or characters or concepts that are really sexy and fun, but they don't necessarily have a novel in them. And I think that doing the work up front of road testing it from every direction to make sure there's a whole story here and that you keep pushing it that way is the benefit of that structure.
One more question.
Sure.
Okay, this is probably just because I'm hungry, but I noticed that you had delicious food in your books and you collaborate over lunch. I'm wondering, do you find there's a particular lunch that really inspires good writing?
I can tell you which lunches don't inspire good writing. We are constantly attracted to things that will put us right to sleep, and we're perpetually having to gear ourselves back toward things like salad and protein and away from like the lasagna that we really want.
Too bad.
I know, and it's funny, when we wrote The Nanny Diaries, we wrote it on Oreos and Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And now we eat salads and we eat whole grain bread with peanut butter. I think I had an apple and peanut butter at 4 o'clock today. It's sad, actually. It's sad. Although when we're outlining, because we don't go for as long stretches because it's such concentrated work, we usually end the day with a slice of pie, and that's a good time.
Yay. Very good. That's awesome.
I just wondered, actually, Emma and Nicola, if there was a passage that you wanted to read from the book or that you think would
sure,
be
sure we'd
yeah?
be delighted.
That would be awesome.
So this is a scene that takes place about a third of the way through the book, and it is, I can't remember how we set this up, do you?
So this scene is supposed to be one of those sort of casual dinner party scenes that are so common on the MTV reality shows.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where the teenagers are just sort of gathered but not a hair out of place and sort of gorgeous
right, of
evening
course.
Dresses in
yeah.
some impeccable setting. So this is supposed to be one of the cast members' house, although XTV has actually rented it for the evening. And it's Jesse with the rest of the cast, who are all the popular kids in her class, who she's never spoken two words to in her life, and now they're all supposed to be best friends. So I think this gives you a little taste of Jesse's made-over reality.
And we should mention that the other people in the cast are the most popular girl in school is Nico. Her boyfriend is Jace. His best friend is Drew. And her sidekick is Melanie. And
his best friend is Rick.
And
Drew is her crush.
Drew is Jesse's crush. Nico, Drew, Jace, Rick, and I all nod on fumes of enthusiasm from where we're seated at the massive mahogany table. Melanie once again delivers her line.
I'm so glad you guys like the pasta. Dessert is from this really cool Doritos recipe I downloaded from the Doritos website, www.doritosdelights.com. It has a delicious key lime center and a crumbly Doritos crust.
A loud stomach grumble interrupts her. We all cut our eyes at Drew, who shrugs apologetically.
Drew!
Kara moans, her bullhorn momentarily at rest in her lap. My non-dining dining companions slump forward in our straight-back Napoleonic chairs while the food stylist appears to spray more baby oil atop Melanie's outstretched pie to keep up the gleam. The same gleam that has been sprayed on all our food tonight. I'm starting to wonder how many brain cells I could really lose to baby-oiled garlic bread and if I would really miss them.
I can't work like this!
Zacharia, the director, screams from the minstrel's balcony above the table.
Drew, just...
Kara wrings her hands in exasperation from the nearby monitor station.
Hang in there. We're almost done with the pie scene, okay?
Drew sighs.
Yeah, I need to eat something that's not in quotes. Seriously, that pizza smells killer.
Rick strains to see the spread on the craft services table just out of shot.
Can't we at least nibble on the stuff we cooked?
Nico twists around us to blink in the wall of lights.
I'll get it right this time, Kara.
I hear Mel offer from behind my chair.
Remember, don't say the line exactly how I said it. It sounds forced.
For the first time, Kara makes little effort to cover her frustration.
Just give it your own spin, Melanie. The clock is ticking.
Sure, no problem.
I turn to see Melanie nod with a frozen smile, her green eyes sparkling in panic. The more frustrated Kara gets, the more Melanie freezes up.
She says she gets it, but I'm not hearing it.
Zacharia mutters.
Sorry, I'll definitely do it this time.
Eager to help Mel out and get this over with before my stomach joins Drew's in a chorus of protest, I whisper over my shoulder, just say, like, this pie from DoritosDelights.com rocks. You guys have to check out the site. And then I'll ask what else is on the site, okay?
Exactly, Jesse.
Kara booms, reminding me that I traded an effective whispering when my parents signed the XTV consent.
Thanks.
Melanie's cheeks redden under her foundation. Sorry, no, I think she's doing a great job.
Melanie, sit Jesse up. Change of plans, take the pie, we'll start the scene from the kitchen.
But I really think Melanie can...
Take the freaking pie to the freaking kitchen, Jesse.
Jace grips his hand around the table lip, the linen puckering.
Please?
Nico implores.
I'm gonna faint, seriously.
No, it's fine.
Melanie steps forward to hand me the cold porcelain dish, and I push up and around her as she studiously smooths the emerald satin of her skirt to sit. I scurry through the double mahogany doors and wait in the trashed kitchen, grabbing an abandoned clammy fusilli from a nearby strainer and snarfing it down as Kara yells,
Action!
I push through the doors and walk to the head of the table, where everyone stares at me expectantly over the flickering candelabras. This pie rocks. It has a key lime center and a Doritos crust. We found it on DoritosDelights.com.
Cool.
Drew gives it his best.
I love that site. It's dope.
Jace helps.
Totally.
Nico lifts a shoulder coquettishly at Jace.
I get a ton of after-school snack ideas there.
I slide the pie into the table, and Melanie brings it home.
Hey, after dinner, let's hit my parents' jacuzzi. Cool, yeah. Let's do it.
We all cheer like we're on Nickelodeon.
Cut moving on.
Kara says the magic words.
I love you guys. Okay, break and into bathing suits.
Thank you. That's a little taste.
Yeah.
A little taste of a...
And a taste with food in it.
That's right. Fusilli.
Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thank you so, so much for coming and telling us about how you do this, too.
My total pleasure. Our total pleasure. Mm. And we should mention also that if you would like to hear more about us and the work that we're doing and the visits we're making like this one, that you can find that out on our website, which is www.emmaandnicola.com.
Perfect. Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for your questions.
Thanks for listening. And remember, if you'd like to find out more about Emma and Nicola's books or anything else that interests you, there's a great place you can go. That's right. Your local library. See you there and keep reading.
It's a lot better than watching TV. The sections about almost everything. You'll always find something you're interested in. Place tectonics or embroidery. Michael Portillo or the banyan tree. The library, the library. It's the place where books are free. The library. The library, it's a lot better than watching TV.